Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV. Still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation, sometimes even the great debate, but it can't be either without your support. Above all, I need your telephone calls. Here's how that works. You call us, we call you back, establish a clear line, and remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero, or I'll have to move on because no one will understand either of us. The number to call is 44208-601-4555. You can also SMS the show, and the best of those, if they're good enough, will come up there on the comment wall. The number for SMS is 44780008066, or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk, or you can tweet me at @comment_presstv. We've got two big questions this evening. One of them will be more aimed at British viewers, but I promise the rest of the viewers around the world, this question also matters to you. Jeremy Corbyn, less than 1 year ago, was elected in a landslide victory as the leader of the Labour Party, the leader of the British opposition. Jeremy Corbyn was one of the leaders of the anti-war movement in Britain. He had spent decades in Parliament supporting all the righteous causes, including the cause of the Palestinian people and many, many other righteous causes around the world. He even presented this show from time to time. That has guaranteed him the enmity and the hatred, is not too strong a word, of those who stand against those righteous causes. So just a few months ago, and only 9 months after he had been elected, a coup was mounted against him. Its leader is a name you'll be familiar with, Tony Blair. Yes, that's right. The former Labour leader, the former Prime Minister of Britain, and his principal acolytes, Peter Mandelson, who was his right man, right-hand man, and Alistair Campbell were the two chief lieutenants of the Blair era. But all kinds of people you've never heard of. That was Chuka Amona. This is Tom Watson. He's the deputy leader of the Labour Party. This is Hilary Benn, the son, I'm sorry to say, of the late and great Tony Benn, who was our leader over decades. I don't know who this person is, but I'm sure that she's one of those biting at Jeremy Corbyn's heels. They have, that's Mandelson, they have mounted a coup to overthrow Jeremy Corbyn. And the most almighty, cataclysmic conflict inside the Labour Party is now underway. And ballot papers in the election will be going out in the next couple of days. And the courts will decide on the 10th of August to whom those ballot papers are to go. Because those who tried to overthrow Corbyn then tried to rule out hundreds of thousands of Labour members from voting in the contest, illegally, in my opinion. And we'll hear what the court says. The court already agreed with me that it was illegal, but the appeal was heard in the High Court today. And therefore, the Labour Party's National Executive has spent £250,000 of Labour members' money to try and rule those Labour members out of voting in the election. You couldn't make it up, but you don't have to, because it's actually happening in real life. The second question is, of course, vitally important for all of us. As the battle to liberate Aleppo moves into even more bloody phases, the question that is in the minds of many as this bitter opposition by the terrorist army, which has engulfed at least half of Syria's territory, as the resistance to the liberating armies of Syria and its allies is obviously on the TV a very, very significant military resistance. The question of where these terrorists got their weapons from becomes a very, very big question indeed. After all, these weapons are small arms, medium, and heavy weaponry. The ammunition appears to be completely unlimited. So where did they get it all from? They stole it from the Iraqi army. They received it in mistaken parachute drops of weapons from the United States and its allies. But that doesn't account for weaponry on this scale. So who, where are these terrorists getting these weapons from? It's a very, very big and very important question. There's some of them being dropped there. Well, for a very long time, the border with Turkey was entirely open. And the satrapies in the Persian Gulf, acting under orders from the owners of these satrapies, the United States and other Western countries, were shipping these weapons across the Turkish border. As a result of United States complicity in the attempted coup to overthrow the government in Turkey, a new era may have opened. Erdogan, the president of Turkey, just visited Russia and met with President Putin, and a new era appears now to be underway. The Turkish border, just this day, was sealed in several important places, and it would appear that no more weapons will cross the Turkish border. Moreover, the president of Turkey has announced that he is seeking Russian cooperation for joint military activities against the terrorist armies of Al-Qaeda and ISIS and their affiliates, who go by a myriad of names, but who are all the same head-cutting, throat-cutting, heart-eating savages, each and every one. So these are the two questions that we will be dealing with tonight. Let me deal with the Corbyn issue first. And I have a special guest, Abdulaziz Suleiman Young, Labour's international officer. Young Labour being the youth section of the Labour Party. Abdulaziz, welcome to the show. Why has the coup against Jeremy Corbyn been mounted? And why has it failed, in your opinion?
So I think it was launched in order to try to bring back an era of the Labour Party by, I think, characters who could easily be described as Blairites. And I think then, unfortunately, it was supported by many members of the soft left who, I think, were somewhat disappointed with the idea of how electable the Labour Party was. I think the reason it's failed fundamentally is because hundreds of thousands of individuals have flocked to the Labour Party and flocked to the idea of moving beyond neoliberalism, moving beyond the privatisations, moving beyond the warmongering of the Blair years, and wanting actually a progressive future for the Labour Party, a future that returns to the core values of the Labour Party.
Now, Corbyn has built the Labour Party in less than 1 year into the biggest Labour Party it's ever been, and built Labour in Britain into the biggest Labour and Social Democratic Party in Europe, if not the world. And according to today's opinion polls, he's just halved the Tory lead. So just what is it that they're disappointed in?
I think what's happened is that people have underappreciated something. which is that even Tony Blair, in 1994, if he was being hammered by the media absolutely as consistently as Corbyn has been, and if he had 80% of his MPs militating against him and leaking against him and not showing him the support, would have found it absolutely impossible or incredibly difficult to win in a year like 97, where Labour would have won if they had put a donkey, a broomstick or anything else up. I think the reality is that they haven't been sufficiently sympathetic of this reality and have been convinced that, well, wait a minute, if only we communicated a little bit better. I think the problem is this with that idea. Two things. There's two things that Blair did that we can never do again. Number one, he sold out the soul of the Labour Party to Murdoch and the media establishment. And number two, he sold out the soul of the Labour Party to the banking establishment. These are two things, and in return, he got decent coverage to the point where the Sun was willing to come out and say, vote for Labour. Now, these are two things we can never return to again. And frankly, actually, I don't think either the media establishment or the banking establishment would bother with Labour anymore, because actually they've got the Tory party that are more than willing to look after their best interests, whereas I think in the past, actually, there was a lot of incompetence in the Tories, and therefore they turned to Labour as a way of fulfilling their best interests. So I think that misunderstanding and misappreciation means that they're willing to be sold by this unfortunate lie that if only we communicated a little bit better, everything would be okay.
But Blair lost 4,875,000 votes between his first election and his third. That loss of votes was surely because the mass of working people didn't benefit as they should have from the 10 richest years in British history with a government with the three biggest Labour majorities in British history.
Absolutely. And what's even more concerning is the degree to which actually people supporting, or Owen Jones himself, are willing to make concessions on another matter that we really shouldn't be talking about making concessions on. And that's on the topic of how we treat people from other countries and actually how we see people from other cultures and other backgrounds. And on the, if they genuinely believe that just being a little bit more willing to be xenophobic is about to win back millions of voters for the Labour Party, they completely misunderstood that actually, like you said, it was the economic disenfranchisement and disenchantment of lots of communities and their feeling that Labour was no longer a party committed to them that actually led to losing those millions of votes, along with, of course, the Iraq War and other decisions that were genuinely against the best interests of lots of working people.
Just this very evening, Owen Smith, the contender for the Blairite camp, backed the Prevent agenda, which with a name like yours, I'm assuming you know, is deeply unpopular amongst the British Muslims. The Prevent agenda, which is supposed to prevent extremism and radicalization, actually has the opposite effect by scapegoating and targeting Britain's Muslim community, the vast, vast majority of whom want nothing to do with extremism, let alone terrorism.
I hadn't actually known that he'd done this, and if that's true...
In the debate this evening, yes.
Yeah, I think I actually missed the debate. But if that's true, then that's another reason for why no one should be voting for Owen Smith. And the simple truth is this. The Prevent agenda is literally telling millions of public servants to spy on Muslims. They're telling millions of public servants to break their relationship with trust, be it a doctor, be it an orthodontist, be it a teacher, be it a lecturer. And it's not something that we should concede one iota to. And the idea that the government itself would literally turn entire swathes of society against a poor marginalized community is extraordinarily terrible. But actually, if the Labour Party of all parties isn't willing to stand up for those for minorities and for the Muslim community, then why, oh why, should the Muslim community support the Labour Party? And I think a Labour Party with Owen Smith, if it's willing to concede on the question of Prevent, is not a Labour Party for Muslims to be supporting.
Thank you. An excellent contribution. Thank you very much, Abdulaziz Suleiman. He's the Young Labour International Officer and a very impressive young man he is too. Let's move on to Toronto. And Al Mobrook. Welcome, Al.
Good evening, Mr. Galloway.
Good evening,
thank
sir.
Thank you very much for your efforts and your work. I always appreciated And I hear from lots of the people over here who know about you.
I'm coming to Canada, brother, to Vancouver on the other side of the country for the International Film Festival at the end of September. And I guess I'll do a meeting or two whilst I'm there, given that it's a very long flight. So try and catch up with me. Go ahead, Al.
We'll look forward to it, Mr. Gallo.
Inshallah.
Now, about your second question about the situation in Syria, I would like to mention very small historical fact, but very important for people, especially people in the area, in the Middle East, to remember that and to know that in the 50s and 60s, the national and the civil government and the revolution happened. The revolution was in Egypt, one in Syria, one in Iraq, and one in Algeria. Each of these countries, they used to help each other. Nasser in Egypt, he used to send the young people to fight in Algeria. Nasser in Egypt, he sent the army to stand at the Syrian border when Israel threatened Syria with the invasion. So these people, they built the modern Middle East, and it was prosperous. In Egypt, we lived lots better than whatever going on in Egypt now. Syria, it was in lots better shape than what it was. In Iraq, they have some circumstances, but these people, they managed to do kind of reconnaissance to the area and to this nation. Unfortunately, that didn't work easy or didn't work good enough for some of the world's powers, and they wanted to destruct this area. And what we see today, worse destruction to the Arab nations and to Islam, never happened since the invasion of the Mongolian Tatars in the 12th century. That's the only time when this nation was destroyed. Today, as the West did attack Iraq and did help some of the Gulf countries, unfortunately, with weapons, none of them used for the interest of these people, but most of it worked against themselves. And that's the same thing. It's very important now that we stop all of this war. The civil war in each of these Arab countries is destroying whatever the people in the 50s and 60s built. So now we have Syria in bad shape, never was this much. The Syrian people, half of them outside the country, refugees, begging for food and shelter. Yes. The women have been raped and thrown out like nothing. And now only these people in this area, they have to stop this madness. This crazy war going on.
Very powerful, very, very powerful contribution. And thank you for it, Al Mabrouk in Toronto. Let's go to the north of Scotland and talk with our young genius, Robert in Peterhead. Go ahead, Robert.
Evening, George.
Evening.
So this whole, I remember waking up on the 24th of June and seeing the whole coup involved with the Labour Party in full swing. I remember walking through and looking at the television and like seeing all these high-profile MPs just resigning one after the other.
Every hour, Robert.
Yeah.
One for every news bulletin.
Exactly. And the reason they did it, in my opinion, was because they saw that Corbyn was essentially bringing the party back to where it should be, firmly on the left. And because all these people are, because all the Blairites who are resigning were all multimillionaires who championed wealth over the will and faith and ability and essentially the views of the people, they championed their wealth more than the opinions and they championed their wealth more than the people, and this is the reason that they resigned, because they saw that Corbyn was taking the Labour Party back to being about the people and the working class.
And they thought that they could break him as a man, you see.
They thought that
by resigning in this coordinated way with military precision and launching this massive media-backed bullying operation against him, they thought that they could force him out.
Exactly, and they failed. They failed catastrophically. I mean, let's face it, the Labour Party is not going in the direction of the multimillionaires and the media and Rupert Murdoch and the Sun and the Daily Mail. It's not going in the direction of them anymore. It's the youth. The youth are flocking to the Labour Party now because Jeremy Corbyn has shown that he can mobilise the youth and the students. I mean, especially seeing as how in 2010 and prior to that, it was the Liberal Democrats who championed the student vote. Now it's the Labour Party. And the thing is, now that the Labour Party are now getting in with the youth, the future is essentially theirs. The future is theirs because the new generation of people, the new generation of students and workers are going to be left wing. They're going to be growing up with the Labour Party that was known in the 60s and the 70s, the party that championed workers' rights, that championed
Indeed.
Students' rights.
Indeed, Robert, thanks for that great call as always. Now, Angela Eagle was the first challenger to Jeremy Corbyn, but she didn't quite take off, if you get my drift. She crashed back to earth and was superseded by somebody I have never heard of before this all began, although he did sit in Parliament at the same time as me, but I wouldn't have recognized him if he'd been sitting next to me on the bus. That's how significant he was. Have a look at this.
I have lodged my papers with the General Secretary today to launch this challenge, and I'm very much looking forward to launching my campaign later today.
Labour values, he's been a loyal servant of our party, he's done a good job in some respects, but he is not a man who can lead us into the next election and win for Labour, and working people in this country cannot afford to have a Labour Party that isn't presenting a powerful opposition and a credible alternative government.
Well, both of them claim to be the unity candidate to reunite the party, even though 60% of the members had just a few months before elected Jeremy Corbyn. They were such unity candidates that they couldn't agree between the two of them which one should go forward. So, of course, the misogynist male candidate elbowed the woman candidate out of the way, with the support of some women Labour MPs that are never done telling us how gender is the most important issue in politics. There's one of them, I said I didn't know who she was, I've just been told who she was, a woman called Jess Phillips, who's in the newspapers today blaming Corbyn for the fact that Labour members have just chosen three men to be the candidate for Mayor of Manchester, Mayor of Liverpool, and Mayor of Birmingham. It is a pity that at least one of these three candidates was not a woman. But that very same complainer, Jess Phillips, supported that man you've just watched, Owen Smith, against that woman that you have just watched, Angela Eagle. Which just goes to show there are a bunch of hypocrites. Inconsistent, contradictory hypocrites. Any stick to beat Corbyn will do. Any stick, and they have seized upon anything and everything. Gender, they've seized upon his support for the Palestinians. They've seized upon his role on the issue of Ireland, on the issue of trade union rights. He even today spoke out against British arms sales to Saudi Arabia being used in the war in Yemen. In the midst of all this, it's a great record, you know. Now I've got to take a very short break, just 3 minutes, for a news bulletin. Don't go away. watch and comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Two questions this evening. Why has the Blairite coup against Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, apparently failed? It's not over yet, of course, and the voting is going to be very, very important. But all the signs are that the Tony Blair comeback project has failed. And where do the Syrian terrorists who are fighting so bitterly in the streets of the great and ancient city of Aleppo and elsewhere, where do they get their weapons from? I don't know about you, but as I watch this epic battle to liberate Aleppo go on, I have to conclude that the Syrian terrorists must be being supplied by a state or states. There is no private market in weapons that could possibly supply the kind of weaponry and the scale of that weaponry that is on display. Let's hear what Hans in Germany thinks. Hans, welcome.
Hello, good evening, George. Thank you for having me on The Voice.
Always a welcome, sir. Go ahead.
Now, to the first question, I'm not so familiar with the internal British politics.
No, of course.
But, frankly to say, I mean, I watch sometimes when I see Jeremy Corbyn, he gives the impression he's a straightforward, honest man.
He is a good and honest man. That's why they hate him.
He's not so slimy like the other hypocrites.
He's the antithesis of the slimy hypocrite politician that we've become used to in Britain.
Yeah. No, not only in Britain.
Quite so. Quite so.
Now, the second question. George, the question is important, but the war is going on in Syria now for 5 years. But, one look on the map shows who has access to Syria. First, Turkey. Second, Jordan. Third, Lebanon. Fourth, Israel through Golan Heights.
And fifth, Iraq.
And Iraq as well, yes, correct. But from there, I think in the beginning, yes, when it all started with ISIL, through these...
ISIS came from Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Yes. So Lebanon weapon will not go through there. From there.
No,
from Jordan,
because the Lebanese resistance is a barrier to that.
Yes, but the main weapon supply came through Turkey. I mean, we know this, and it was documented, when these prosecutors ordered to open the trucks, and it came out, it was the Turkish Secret Service. So, but who is behind this Secret Service is, of course, the government in Ankara, and I believe also the CIA, America, and others. The financial
NATO
comes. NATO, maybe, yes. Because, we must not forget the aim. The aim is to topple Assad. That was, remember when Hillary Clinton in Riyadh with the former Saudi foreign minister, when she said, when he asked her, she asked him, don't you think it's a good idea if we support the rebels they call them rebels, they are criminals.
Mm.
If we support the rebels in Syria? And the answer was, I think it is an excellent idea. And after this, several times in TV, you could see Hillary Clinton, Assad must go, she shouted out. So it's, for me, it's clear. The main supply came through Turkey. Now, with a new situation with Putin and Erdogan, there might be a change. So then, to my opinion, then it might go through Jordan. Yeah, and it is clear. I mean, this war could have been ended already 4 or 5 years ago. This is not an army fighting there. They are guerrilleros, they are not even combatants, according to international law. They are criminals. if you don't supply weapons, after 4, 5, 6 weeks, the whole thing is finished. And there were signs that even America, I mean, I don't know if it's true, the Iraqi TV reported it, that they were supplied partly from by air from American planes.
Yeah, we showed some footage of it earlier on, yeah.
Yes.
They said so it was all a mistake.
Yeah, so it's such a dirty... I mean, this is like every
Hans,
war, it is
Hans,
awful.
Is it the case in Germany, as it is the case apparently here, that the fact that we are now on the same side as Al-Qaeda and ISIS in the war in Syria, does that cause any political waves? I mean, I've given up on the United States. It's only not that long ago that on 9/11 they murdered 3,000 American citizens, and now the American government is working with them, and yet nobody seems to do or say very much about that. Ditto here, maybe to a slightly lesser extent. Is it even an issue in Germany?
It partly is, but all the majority of the media, they spread out disinformation, or they just ignore it, like the war in Yemen, when Saudi daily bombs civilians, hospitals, everything. You know, it is, I must, unfortunately, the media and the media in Germany, they are not reporting properly.
Is there the same Russophobia in Germany as there is here? You see, it's mixed up now. The hatred of Assad is compounded by the hatred of Putin, the hatred of Russia. It's like going back to the Cold War days here.
Yeah, it is a very tension situation. Also in Germany, of course, it is reported. Also, I mean, we got more than 1 million refugees from Syria mainly, also from Iraq partly, from North Africa, from other African parts, but the majority come from Syria. And it is almost impossible to give them shelter quickly and everything. And now, of course, now it comes out that amongst these refugees you find ISIL people. We had several attacks now on police and in Munich and Würzburg and other places. So I think the population, I mean, still there is a welcome atmosphere for these people, because, I mean, Germany has long experience with refugees from the east, from the eastern territories, when they were kicked out of what is today Poland, Yugoslavia, and Czechoslovakia. So the Germans have a more understanding for refugees, no matter if it's Muslim or not. No, but if this continues with this undermining, that then the people, like you can imagine, they say, ah, most of them, they are terrorists, which is, of course, not true.
Well, of course, but what puzzles me is that the conclusion the public doesn't reach is, why have we helped to cause all this chaos in Syria and the flight of all these refugees? Hans, thanks for the call, my friend. I must press on. Marcus Papadopoulos is editor of Politics First magazine and an excellent guest. I'm glad to welcome him back. Marcus, you know about the arms trade, particularly in the Balkans, in the Eastern Central Europe. The scale of the weaponry that the terrorist army in Syria are using is so vast, it must be state-backed, no?
Good evening, George, and thank you ever so much for having me back on.
Welcome.
Yes, my observation regarding this revelation about weapons from the Balkans going to the terrorists in Syria, and let's call them terrorists, which they are, let's not romanticize them as rebels, how Western journalists and Western politicians are. Exactly. These people are terrorists. But my observation is that it demonstrates how America's client states in Eastern Europe, from Croatia to Serbia and so forth. And I say Serbia with great sadness, but Serbia has become a client state of America. But the Americans are using their client states in Eastern Europe to indirectly fight their dirty wars.
Ukraine also is a big source of weapons, isn't it?
Yeah, but yes, it certainly is. And the Americans, without a doubt, have orchestrated what is happening in Syria. Without American consent, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar would not be doing what they're doing in Syria without the Americans having given them the green light.
That's absolutely obvious, yeah.
And the amount of weapons that have flowed in to Syria is the reason for why Syria finds itself in year five of a terrible conflict, and why tens of thousands of Syrians have died. And you know, Western journalists, they don't like to talk about this figure, but nearly 100,000 Syrian soldiers have perished in this war. And you know, George, in my opinion, the Syrian army is the only moderate force in Syria.
It's certainly the only legal force, and anybody that the Syrian government invites to come to their aid, these are the only legal combatants in this whole picture. Marcus, when these fanatic extremists are cutting people's heads in France, they're called what they are, terrorists, savage murderers. Yeah. But when they're doing it in Syria, they're called rebels. How does that work?
Well, I mean, you know, George, that the West has a history of working with Islamic extremists when it suits them. It started in Afghanistan in the 1980s against the Soviet army. It continued in Bosnia during the civil war there. It continued into Libya, and it's continuing to Syria today. The Americans in particular, but also the British and the French, but the Americans especially, they will use repugnant groups to try and achieve geostrategic objectives. And Western media, which is very much a part of the political establishment in Washington and in London, they will disguise the true nature of these people to their domestic audiences. So like you said, when they commit heinous crimes in Paris or Brussels, they're called what they are, terrorists. But when they do the same, for example, in Syria, you don't hear about these atrocities. They're just called rebels. They're just called freedom fighters. They're whiter than white, and they're fighting against this despicable, tyrannical, genocidal.
And yet it's the same people.
And it's exactly the same people, exactly the same ideology. And, you know, George, I would like to say this. There's a lot of talk at the moment in Western media about what's happening in Aleppo. Well, do you know, saying I don't remember Western journalists for the last 4 years talking about how the terrorists in Eastern Aleppo have been killing civilians in the government-controlled parts of Aleppo with artillery fire, with snipering, etc., etc. And, you know, the whole world should really be behind the Syrian military, the Russian military, the Iranian military, and Hezbollah in its attempt to encircle eastern Aleppo, because that part of Aleppo must be brought under control of the Syrian government, the only legitimate authority in Syria. And by doing that, that will strike a grave blow to terrorists fighting in Syria. And let's just be clear about it. The Syrian army is the heart and soul in the fight against terrorism. And should the Syrian army collapse on the battlefield to be defeated, which I don't believe it will, but if it did, then the threat posed by ISIS and other terrorist groups to Europe would increase.
Unbelievable. They would be, their black flag would be flying in Damascus, and they'd be on the Mediterranean coast. Marcus Papadopoulos, editor of Politics First magazine, thanks as always for an outstanding contribution. Let's go to Iran and talk to Akbar. Akbar, welcome to the show.
Hello, George Galloway.
Good evening to you, sir. Go ahead.
Are you fine, sir?
By the grace of God, I am. Yes, go ahead, sir.
Mr. George Galloway, you are the voice of the human justice in this damn world of Daesh, in this damn world of Tunisia and other damn politicians. You are the voice of the human justice.
Thank you, my dear brother. That's why Press TV does such a wonderful job. It gives the other side of the story, the human side of the story.
You shall not fail, George Galloway.
Go ahead, sir. What would you like to contribute?
Let's go to your question. Of course, it's clear-cut that the weapons that come from the Saudi Arabia, of course.
Well, the money for them, the money for them certainly does. Do you think the weapons also come? How are they transported into Syria?
Yes. Yeah, it is transferred by regions like Turkey, of course. Like Turkey and Jordan comes to Syria. To Syria to the hands of the Daesh terrorists and killing and cutting the throat of the innocent children and people. And Saudi Arabia with these damn ideologies, Wahhabism ideology, promoting this ideology through the world to show the bad Islam. But Islam is not bad, Mr. George Galloway, as you know.
Excellent call. Thank you, Akbar. It's undoubtedly true that Saudi Arabia and other satrapies in the Persian Gulf are putting up the money for this war. There's no doubt at all about that. But of course, it was the Bush and Blair invasion and occupation of Iraq which set this fire spreading throughout the region. Even the President of the United States has accepted that. Tony Blair was the British Prime Minister who helped Bush, and without that help it couldn't have been done, to bring about this total devastation that now has spread throughout the region. Tony Blair is not down. He's still behind political events in Britain and inside the Labour Party. He's backing a candidate called Owen Smith to overthrow the anti-war, pro-Palestinian Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn. Well, just in case you didn't get the code, this was Blair's candidate, Owen Smith, accusing Jeremy Corbyn of anti-Semitism. No more foul lie could possibly be uttered. He said he wasn't accusing him, but of course he said that anti-Semitism had become a problem in the last 9 months. And the last 9 months were the 9 months that Jeremy Corbyn had been the leader of the Labour Party. And what he really means is, not that Corbyn is anti-Semitic or that the people who support him are anti-Semitic. What they mean is that Corbyn supports the Palestinian people in their struggle to be free, in their struggle to be free from the occupation of an illegal settler state. That's the stakes here. Corbyn is against war, invasion, occupation, racism, and the Blairites can't stand it. They cannot put up with a Labour Party on the right side of these questions. They say they want unity, but in fact they are wrecking the Labour Party in public opinion because they cannot accept the victory of Corbyn less than 1 year ago. And I repeat, in that 1 year, Corbyn has built the Labour Party. He has tripled the Labour Party in size. Can you imagine that? From 200,000 to 600,000 and climbing. He's made it the biggest Labour Party in its entire history of 116 years. He has built the biggest Labour Party, Social Democratic Party, in the entire European continent and perhaps in the world. Let's take what will probably have to be our last call of the evening. From Milkado, I hope I've pronounced your name correctly, in South Africa. Yeah. Welcome to the show, my friend. Yes, go ahead. You're on the air. Turn your television down.
Okay.
Go ahead, brother, please.
Okay. I'm saying that in problem in Middle East, the cause of the problem there is American. The problem is from American. Since the time they invaded Iraq, the problem started in Middle East. Because I'm saying the truth. Because without invading Iraq, those militant groups and terrorists will not come out. But they make that invasion, everybody is out to defend his own territory. Like people loyal to Saddam Hussein, they have their own sector. Start fighting the government in board now. From there, you have the Okada, ISIS, different Daesh, many sectors. That is the problem in the world.
Well, you're right. They are the big problem in the world. Milkado, thank you for that. I'm sorry it was short, but we've run out of time. But you can continue the discussion on Twitter at @comment_PressTV. And God willing, I'll be back here next week at the same time with more Comment.
Hello, if you just comment, your name and the question, your contact number.
And just make sure that your television volume is set up to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You need to directly put through this phone number and then we'll be back.
Comment. Can I have your telephone number?